Welcome to the Andrew D'Angelo podcast.
Constant Constance. Each week, Andrew, renowned jazz saxophonist and brain cancer survivor, invites us to look at the many worlds of his guests with conversations that cover all the arts, human resilience, a little bit of politics, and a lot of humour.
You can't fail to have a fantastic time.
What's happening, brother?
How you doing, man?
I'm well, ma'am. I'm good now, seeing you.
All right, Andrew D'Angelo and J.D. Allen in the room together, man.
Boom, brother.
So, hello, everybody, and welcome. We are here today with one of the most incredible, elegant saxophonists and musicians I know, Mr. J.D. Allen.
How you doing, man? You good?
I was talking. Do you know Reed? You and Reed have played together, right?
Yeah, I know Reed. That's my man.
So, you know, whenever I talk to Reed on the phone, or he did one of the podcasts early on, and when people ask these days, like, how are you doing? It's like, do you really want to know how I'm doing? Like, you really want to know what's going on?
The truth, yeah.
So, I'm okay, but, you know, things are just fucked up right now, man. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, they are fucked up.
Did you see that video Quest just put up? Quest Love, that video he posted?
No. What did he post?
Oh, some fucking Karen racist fucking crazy shit and accusing this kid of stealing her phone. And
oh, no. That's Keon Harrell's son. Quest Love put it up?
Yeah, he shared it. Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's the trumpet player, Keon Harrell, man. That's his son.
That's some crazy shit, man. That's some crazy shit. I'm sorry.
But you know what, man? It's happened to me so many times, man. Like, I would be, like, the last time it happened to me, I was in a club. I was actually playing in a fucking club. And this lady thought I took her fucking purse. I was like, bitch, you just saw me on the stage. Why the fuck would I?
Are you serious?
Yeah, she couldn't find her purse, and because I was sitting next to her, you know, I was sitting waiting on break.
Right.
She said, you know, I think this gentleman took my purse, and they were like, this dude is playing on the gig. I mean, like, why would he? It was crazy. So, you know, he caught it on film. That's all. So let's see if they're going to catch her.
What do you mean catch her? Like, you know,
the general trend is people find out where a person works. And right. Where they live.
They try to get them fired or something like this.
Yeah, the shit is done. And then it's followed by them giving an apology. Like, I'm sorry, I've learned my lesson. And, you know, that's usually the norm. But if Questlove shared it, that's probably what's going to happen. You know, somebody's going to magically find out some anonymous type shit. You right. know, with the Guy Fawkes mask, go find out.
Well, I mean, there was like, you know, 8,000 comments. So, I'm glad the Quest 8, was like,
comments.
Well, I'm exaggerating, but, you know, somewhere in there, some kind of crazy number. But it's like, and that's all just because he was a black kid, right? I mean, it's and probably same in your situation, right? I mean,
it was definitely, you know, I mean, yeah, that was because of that. You know, a lot, you know, not to defend anyone, but a lot of times, man, people do it and don't even know that they're doing it, you know?
Right.
Like, there was a situation at my son's school recently, my youngest son, where I forget the name of the author, but it was a pretty, I forget the name of the book, actually, because the subject was so fucked up. But so my son's, you know, he lives in New York, and he's in a class, and he's like maybe one of three black young guys in the class, and they were using the word nigger in the book.
Okay.
Which, you know, so I had a conversation with his mom. It's like, oh, you know, I don't want him to hear that, you know, because it made him upset. But I said, well, you know, if it's in the book, I'd rather him hear it, and then at least there's a conversation that takes place because of hearing it. Maybe like, okay, if it is uncomfortable, you're not going to get rid of the word, but if you face the word head on and have a conversation about it, something can come out of it. You know what I mean? But the issue was, in the book, another character, there was a woman who was called a whore. And the teacher did not want to share the fact that this white woman was called a whore, but she was totally down we sharing the fact about this black nigger who was no good. Jesus Christ. That was this big thing at his school. And at first, when I heard the complete story, I said, oh, I said, because she didn't want to share. She didn't want to get the complete fucked upness of the vibe. She just wanted to single out this thing, you know. So, I mean, the issue got resolved, but it was really interesting. So, yeah, you know, you come across it, but the teacher didn't realize what she was doing. Not to say that it excuses her, but it's been ingrained in our culture so long
right.
that you don't even know you're doing it sometimes. You know, it's like, so.
It's yeah, just, I mean, I had a friend of mine who is a lesbian and mm-hmm. on last week, and she has play parties. I don't know if you know what those are, but they're basically sex parties. And we were talking about, and mostly for lesbian women, but mm-hmm. we were talking about the use of the word faggot and how that's tossed around all the time. Like people mm-hmm. like, you faggot, you know, even when somebody's not gay, it's just used as like a derogatory,
yeah.
you're a weak faggot, right? Yeah. And I was trying to engage with her about it, and her partner, girlfriend, wife, whatever she is, stepped in and started yelling at me. I was like, look, I'm just asking her, you know, what her perspective on the yeah. use of the word. And anyway, that conversation stopped. It's all of this stuff is very sensitive for people. And I don't think it should be. I, like you said about your son, we should yeah. be talking about it. Talk, that's the only way it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, you could be told to not say something, but if you don't understand the why behind it,
right.
then I think the point is missed, you know? So, there was a situation, actually with my younger sons again about that word. And I told my sons, I don't want you to use it because you don't want anybody calling you a nigga. And you right. know how that feels. No, right. so, but
yeah, but now, check this. Go ahead.
I got a story for you. Now, check this out, bro. So, so my son was in the class. And it was a young guy or they, you know. So whenever the young child would come to class, depending on how the child was dressed, the child was like 11 years old. If he came or, you know, if they came in a dress, you had to address they by what you saw. So my son, you know, I said, well, we're going to respect that, da, 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 right? But that same kid called my son a nigger.
What? Out of here. No.
So I told my son, fuck it, all bets is off.
Okay. This world, I mean, if this pandemic does nothing else, maybe, I mean, I've been talking to women in the restaurant. Yeah. I've been talking to women in the restaurant business in their 20s. I've been talking yeah. to lesbians who are closer to my age. You know, my ex-boyfriend, and he's from first generation Peruvian, and just the hopefully this pandemic is and Trump is reflecting back at us like we have some shit to work on here.
Oh yeah,
you know, and it's just everybody's like, oh man, this country's so fucked. Well, then maybe we should do something about it. I don't know, you know what I mean?
Maybe we should,
right?
Yeah. I mean, I think we can start with the climate, you know, like how about we fix the place where we living on so we can have a place to fix this shit? You know, that's what's like, which I think in itself is a part of a sense of control, you know, too. I mean, it's deep, man. There's some nefarious motherfuckers out there.
Right.
Of all colors, bro.
Right.
Not just one.
Right.
Nefarious.
It there's that I don't know if you've seen that Louis C.K. bit where he talks about how humans, you know, we just like fucking up the earth. And I'm not going to be as funny as Louis C.K., right? We just like
I love Louis C.K.
Yeah, funny. And he's just like, yeah, you know, see that oil over there? Let's drill that out, and you know, let's like you know tear down all those trees. I mean, it's weird. We need to learn how to take care of our home. You know?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what's the game plan? Like, what's the end game? It's like, okay, you got all this fucking money, but you don't have anywhere to live to spend it. They must got some other planet figured out or some shit.
You think they're like, I mean, there are people, I mean, you can find it on the internet, people that believe that they've colonized the moon or Mars or, you know, whatever, pick your thing.
Well, they NASA announced that they have water on the moon, so it would not surprise me.
Water on the moon or Mars? I haven't heard about the moon.
Well, on Mars and the moon.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, China is up there already.
Really?
Oh, yeah, China. And I think, well, China and Russia are together, but China is already, they're there. Yeah.
So, like, all right, so we fucked up this planet. Let's get over here. Yeah. And, huh.
And leave all the poor people here. We all keep like some Mad Max shit, like, which I actually would look forward to, because I, you know, I mean, despite everyone, obviously people passing away and the amount of suffering due to this shared experience is something to take a pause and think, you know, like, wow. But there's a lot of opportunity now, you know, I think as musicians, even though we don't have a place to play, but I've noticed that the conversation has been about us owning our own spaces, or at least the concept of space and going through booking agents and managers is up in the air. So I think there's gonna be some amazing coalitions formed as a result of this experience, man. So that's what helps me get up in the morning. So I have to think, like, or I just lie in the bed.
You know, it's a
beer, like,
right? And you okay? First of all. Two things. One is, yesterday when you texted me and you said, I don't want to talk on video today, I don't feel like shaving. This whole podcast is my schedule is based around what day I can shave. So I can relate. That's all I'm saying.
I didn't really do the shit. I'm like, man, no. Fuck it. You know, I'm all right.
You look great, man. You look
I went to the
great.
Store with my wife. We went grocery shopping. We tried to rush to get past. Like, yo, I got to... That's my man. I'm gonna be cool, you know. Hey.
It's all good, man. And you know, it's like when you're talking about us artists creating space. Before this, I ended up doing this interview with a guy who wanted to know why I was starting the podcast. This guy out in California, and I was like, you know, because this is cool. This is nice. You know, we get a chat. I mean, you and I have talked about playing together, or maybe starting a band.
I still want to do that, man.
Me too. And I actually had a dream about it. And if you want to hear about it, I'll tell you about the dream. Definitely, but it's just I couldn't believe the audacity this guy had. Like, why would you start a podcast? Because I want to hang out with my friends. I want to talk to my fellow artists. And you know, we're trying to find new ways to express ourselves. And you know, and for me, I feel as comfortable here as I do on stage. And to be honest, I don't miss airports. I really don't miss
that
traveling.
That I don't miss. Yeah, no. The airport thing. Yeah, that became a drag, right? The going through the taking off your shoes and shit.
Like, strip down naked before you get on an airplane.
Damn. Oh, shit, I forgot to put on, just wear my pajamas. I fucking forget every time. Did you know Dwayne Burnham?
Of course.
Oh man, Dwayne used to wear his fucking pajamas.
Yeah, he was notorious. Notorious.
I was like, you're a fucking genius.
Yeah. It's like those, they were kind of like sweat pajamas, sweats.
He like, got there, looked like he just ate an egg and bacon sandwich. He was done. It was so over that shit, man. Oh man.
So do you want to like flip over into music, or you want to continue where we're going?
Bro, whatever you want, man.
All right. So to be honest, JD and I are just starting our fruitful and beautiful relationship here.
Exactly.
And I wanted to read this quote. JD Allen has been featured on NPR's Fresh Air, in The Atlantic, The New York Times, and hailed by Ben Ratliff, who was a writer for the Times. Yeah. I don't know if he still is, as a tenor saxophone with an enigmatic, elegant, and hard-driving style. JD is one of the most thoughtful jazz saxophonists on the scene today, a prolific composer. JD releases a new album every year. Do you release an album every year?
Yeah, every year, man.
I was like, that's a lot of pressure, man. Like, Ben's like, or whoever wrote this is like, you have to release a new album every year, man.
Every year, man. Well, the exception of 1 year, but yeah, it's been every year. I'm actually going into the studio in a couple of days. Yeah.
Where are you recording? What are you doing?
I'm currently in Cincinnati. So I'm going to record it in Cincinnati, this place called a monastery. And I'm going to call the record, well, Cincinnati is known as Queen City. So the name of the recording is going to be called Queen City, you know, in honor of where I'm at and then the vibe here. So I'm going to keep it going. I thought I wasn't going to record, but I decided to do a solo record. And I figured it's good enough time to do it.
You know? Beautiful, man. I can't wait to hear that.
Well, let's see how it goes. But well, it's coming out good or bad, you know, but that's the only thing I could think of, bro. I couldn't hear anything else but that. I mean, cause I thought for a minute that at the top of the year, I was like, oh, shit. I mean, I got really sad, like I'm sure everyone did. I said, man, I better learn how to play by myself.
Right.
Because we wasn't.
All right. Listen, yeah, you know, like, don't let your mind go there, everybody. We just mean play music by ourselves.
Yeah. You know, be able to, like, at least, you know, figure some shit out. So this is the end result of trying to figure out. It's been an interesting journey trying to figure that out. That's a whole nother monster in itself. It's like, whoa.
You know, one thing that when I put my feelers out to what to talk to you about, somebody said that JD is so good at naming things and your records and your songs and all that. And they got quite elaborate in their conversation about, you know, ask him the meaning behind. And so it's interesting. I was going to ask you before you said it, like, do you already know what you're going to call the record or the music, or how does that, I mean, I'm definitely not going to put myself parallel with you, but
you'll make me better. I feel like maybe I can play.
I mean, I always have a vision of a project and an idea of, it, not that the name doesn't change, but I mean, if you want a specific question, I can ask it, or if you just want to talk about, you know, like, how do you name stuff? Like, where does Barracoon come from? You know, the G thing, or, you know, these types of things.
Yeah. Barracoon was a book. Zora Neale Hurston wrote a book about the last American, or the last slave. They called him the last cargo from Africa. And Kujo, he was actually freed. He was caught and he was a slave for maybe 6 months. And then the 1869 Free Slave Act came and he was free. You know, so that's what that was about. And just so happened, 2019 was the 400th anniversary of Black Americans being in this country. So I wanted to celebrate that. I thought it was important. And we recorded Barracoon. And the G thing actually happened on this last recording we did. My new bassist, Ian Kinsler, I didn't have a name for that title, for that song. And he said, what are we playing next? That thing in G, concert G. And he was like, the G thing? And I was like, oh, that's perfect, because it could be like the God thing, the G spot.
I mean, I was going to make a joke about the G spot. And then I was going to ask you if it had to do with God, because I wrote a song called God. And not because I know what God is. But I'm just searching like everybody else.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I know. But everybody got in the band, not everybody, but some of the people in my band got mad at me for calling the song God. So I had to call it G_D. And I was like, I'm not proclaiming to know what God is. So the controversy is, you know, like, so I wanted to know, like, was it like the God thing, or like the G string, or the G spot?
Yeah, or what's another one? Oh man, he's a real G, like you older
OG.
It was like, I just thought it was so fussy, man. That's what we gonna call this tune,
right?
Know? The G thing, you know. So depending on what day you catch, I mean, I gave you all of the possibilities, but depending on what day you catch me, and you know, if they ask that question comes up, I'll have another answer for it. You know,
in this fluid conversation that I had, Love Stone, Grace, Shine, Toys, Die Dreaming, I am, Pharaoh's Children, Bloom, Americana, Musing on Jazz and Blues. And those are just some of your titles for different things. And so, you know, whoever this person was, just obviously very into your music.
And oh, I appreciate it. The titles are framed. So it's like, it's as if going into a museum or, well, I think a lot of artists now don't particularly use frames, but I've noticed a good frame makes the picture just pops out anymore, and it gives the listener an idea of what was thought about or what you're thinking about in this particular moment or this particular year. So whatever album that a person picks out, that's usually what I was reading something that particular year, or I was into this thing this year, and I usually write titles down. If I see something, oh, I like that title, I'm going to write something about it, you know? And I just think it gives, it's like naming your children. It gives a song meaning and purpose to it for the listener to latch on to and wonder, you know? So I'm in the titles, yeah, you know. My favorite one, I did one called, and I got this one from the New York Times. It's called The Cross and the Crescent Sickle. And it was an article about Russian Muslims in the 90s. And it was a killing article, but that was the name of the article, The Cross and the Crescent Sickle. That was my favorite, you know. So.
It's interesting because I've had my own conundrum with where I have an idea for a title or whatever it is, and I think, I don't need to write it down, I'll remember, and then, of course, I forget, right?
Yeah.
It's cool that you actually document it.
Oh, yeah.
So this gentleman, Kenny Paxton, do you know him?
Sounds familiar.
Okay, saxophonist. Mm-hmm. I don't know him that well myself. Okay, here's a couple of thoughts. How does JD approach composing for his trio? How collaborative is the process? I actually want to know that too. What goes into getting that amazing sound of his?
The trio thing is, obviously everything's written, starts from a piano. Well, this will probably be the first, this recording coming up would be the first departure in a way from the piano, because I based a lot of the stuff just off of playing the saxophone. But it starts with the piano, and it takes about a year for the tune to form. And that's a few rehearsals, playing it with people, recording it and going back. Okay, let's try it like this. Let's try it. It's never just a finished product. It's a work in progress. And the tone thing is just like everybody else, man, long tones, you know?
Right.
I just practice, you know, loud to soft, soft to loud. That's one that's been really helpful. And now I'm really getting back into the taking a few hours and just working on my tone, you know, and that's almost like a meditative thing at this point for me now. Yeah.
Can we discuss that? Because this is something that gets, thank you for answering that. I hope Kenny is satisfied.
Yeah, I hope that worked.
Yeah. Well, but the reality is that something that gets passed over a lot in, especially in these saxophone forums or, you know, specific to saxophone gear, mm-hmm. is that the long tones, sure, learn, transcribe, learn giant steps, whatever you want to do. But there's also, like you said, this meditation. And when I listen to your music, okay, I had this really crazy moment and I was smoking a joint and I was listening to...
Good, it's great. Smoke a joint.
That's listening to, it was Barracoon. I tried to find this song yesterday I was listening to, but it was like you were taking two solos at the same time. And so maybe like trees, when you see a tree, it has a root system that you can't see. And there's stories out there now that trees communicate to each other via their root systems.
I saw that. Yeah,
right. So I was like, I wonder if JD is like connecting to a higher power, a source, whatever you want to call it, or if there's something going on other than just like, yeah, he has an amazing sound. Yeah, he does long tones, but and I'm not putting this in your mouth. I'm asking you, is there something else that's going on? Like some kind of connection to?
Well, you know what? It all goes back to the blues, really. I know that's like a cliche thing. And when I used to hear people say that, I used to be, oh man, here we go with this shit, the nobility of the blues. But I get it. You know, it's like, I hope this answers the question. It's like, okay, when people think of a blues, they think of a 12-bar thing, but I don't think it's that, because if that was the case, I wouldn't hear it all over the world, not just from us Black Americans here or the American or the North American experience, our experience as people from here. We're all connected to Appalachians. I hear in Appalachian music. I hear it in Russian classical music. I hear it in Mali. I hear it in Asian culture. It's just, for lack of a better word, until I find out what it exactly is, it's the spirit. I hear it in cantor music. It's the cry. That's what they call it, I think. I try to connect to that. And to me, that's just being sincere, just believing in what you're doing. Whereas it's about the notes, but then it's more about the feeling, if that means anything. So you can't transcribe a feeling, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You can't transcribe a feeling. You have a feeling, you know?
Right. And yeah. Okay. That was like just an absolutely amazing answer to that question. And
oh, I hope so.
Well, yeah, but that's what I hear people doing something on the internet. You know, they post a video that I transcribed, fill in the blank, and I'm going to play the solo. I'm like, yeah, but you can't really, you're not really tapping into that feeling whoever that you're, some people do, but a lot of people don't. And I was excited to speak to you because when I hear your music, and now you're saying it's the blues, and I understand that that feels like a coin, but you defined it. But there's just something else going on that I am unable to transcribe. I'm unable to capture because it's you. It's your essence. It's your energy.
Well, that's the thing, Andrew. Like, is it me? Is it, or is it us? Is it a pool that we all dip into? Because I guess we've had a lot of time this year to really sit down. At least I'm trying to register, like, what the hell happened pre-COVID and what's going to happen. And now I practice at 13 BPM, that slow. And man, in between those notes, there's a lot of shit that goes on. So it's like, is it really me or is it us? Like, just being able to tap into a human quality, a human experience, you know, a connection that we all love, we all hate, we all have similar problems that we deal with. We deal with it in different ways, but there are emotions that we all share as human beings, and like just learning how to transcribe that. What does happy sound like? I mean, Ornette Coleman can make major sound sad. Like, these are feelings that we all have that, you know, so I don't think it's me. It's just, I'm just trying to tap into like some real shit, you know, that you can't, I mean, you can transcribe, but like you said, you know, the inflections and just the why makes it something else. And I think that you know, great art or people who attempt to make something great, that's in common. It's like going into a museum, you can see all of these fine artists, but then when you see Picasso or the greats, their shit just pops out because it's something extra, you know what I mean? So I don't know, you know, that's just transcribing feelings, I guess, you know.
I agree that there's some ultimate, and again, I'm just gonna go back to the tree. You posted a quote from Hermann Hesse about trees.
Yeah, oh yeah, love that, man.
And I was like, oh my God, that's my connection to JD, because I'm so, I've actually hugged trees.
Oh,
I
man.
Go and talk to them, and they have this underground network. Apparently, I was going to say this article, which I didn't, and I apologize, about how they actually scientifically figured out that trees communicate with each other.
Yeah, I read in that. I think that article, I've seen an article about it where they even have, they actually fight, the roots fight. And then there's these little wars that go on for space.
Right.
You know, it's a serious connection. That freaks me out too.
So I agree that there is that there is this overlying connection. Here's a question that I want to ask you that kind of ties in to, I have so many questions from people.
Oh, that's cool,
for you,
brother.
That
I'm is having, like, I'm fun. It's making me think about stuff.
I want to ask you this question from Ian Shaw, who is a really nice guy. He's actually a medical professional in Canada.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it says, JD is not at all a gearhead and gets a huge and lush sound. I believe His version of Stairway to the Stars was recorded on a Yamaha student model tenor, for example. Maybe ask him to talk about that. I love this question. I love this question. And I want to know, is it true or what's the deal?
It's very true. I mean, I have to say, and this is not a commercial, but I really like this company. I am George Yanagisawa, and this has been for maybe the past 3 or 4 years. A wonderful small family, you know, very accommodating. You know, they took a chance and let me play their horns. But up until that point, I always played on student horns, man. You know, I mean, I started out music in the Detroit public school system, and a lot of the instruments weren't really great or anything like that. I mean, I started out on clarinet. I remember like pads falling out. I would take newspaper and put them in the pads to make pads out of newspapers.
Wow.
I couldn't afford, my family couldn't afford lessons. So I got it where I can get it. And obviously if the instrument broke, man, I would take these series of rubber bands and crazy stuff. So it was like, I realized at an early age, and actually a lot of the older jazz musicians in Detroit would say, it's not the mouthpiece or the horn that makes the sound. The sound comes from your head. So that's my approach to the instrument. Now, the instrument can make it easier for you to get to that sound, but it shouldn't stop you from what the sound is in your head. You probably got to work a little harder, which I did on those horns. But so yeah, it's true. I believe, and you know, whatever, as so long as the horn has pads and it works, it shouldn't stop you from your sound, because the sound doesn't come from the equipment. It comes from inside. The equipment helps you produce it easier. So I didn't let that student horn stop me. I wanted to play that damn song, bro. And I was cooked.
So Stairway to the Stars, JD plays a student model Yamaha.
I play a student model Yamaha,
so
bro.
Check that out, folks. And for all of you on the internet talking about your ligatures and which reed you use and like mouthpieces and, you know, all of that, which, as JD says, is important.
Yeah.
But at the same time, and you keep pointing to your head, I would say it comes from the heart, but it doesn't matter. I think we're saying the same thing.
Yeah, that should be connected. The ultimate goal is to make them connect. So when you point to either one, it should be, you know. But yeah, you're right. It's from the heart. But that's what I had. I wasn't going to let that opportunity go to waste because I didn't have the tools. I just use what I had and make the best out of the situation.
And obviously, you're laughing, but it's just like that. I saw this Bulgarian saxophonist, he posted some video and he had so many rubber bands and shit on his horn. And he sounded absolutely incredible. Oh, and before he started the video, he was putting out a cigarette.
I saw that.
You saw that? I was like,
bro, he had one.
I love you. I love you. I love you.
Bro, that was that dude I want to meet. That was my superhero.
Me too.
With everything. He was like, he was killing it. Oh, this is fucking great, man.
If I can find that video, I'll connect it. I'll put the link in here.
Oh, you have to, man. It's I saw that. I watched that so many times. That video was so happening, bro.
Right? And I actually was watching it to try to see like what the rubber bands were doing, like for the keys. And then I was like, all right, this music is just amazing. I'm so happy you saw that.
Yeah,
because
man,
if I see one more photo of like our friend Mark Turner, the tenor player, like looking at his reed, have you ever seen? Like, I'm like, Mark, it's enough with the reeds, man. Just play. You sound amazing.
Make sure your legs are put your knees are touching. Yeah, okay. Then you showed a picture of the Bulgarian saxophones with a cigarette and rubber band.
Yeah. Okay, Mark Turner, we love you. Your playing is amazing.
Yeah,
but I swear to God, I've seen so many photos of you looking at your reed and shit. It's just funny. And, you know, we all should be who we are. That's the end. But it's like, I was so excited to ask you that question. And then Oren asks, what's your practice routine? But I think you've kind of already talked about that, right? I mean, you've sort of been...
Well, I've gotten back to... Well, obviously, man, at the beginning of the year, it was like non-existent for a minute. I was like... It was like, okay, 20 minutes is like, wow, a major feat. I've gotten it back up to about 5-6 an hour a day. It's back to where it was before this happened.
Cool.
And I do 20-minute intervals, you know, 20 minutes, take a little break, 20 minutes. And I do them like reps, just add them up, you know, and it comes out about 5. On a good day, 6. But I found out that once you get past 4, something happens, man. The phone rings or an opportunity comes. So when I figure that shit out, I'll be trying to go past 4, like some shit can go down in the universe, you know. And I know that sounds spooky, but that's...
Oh, it doesn't sound spooky on this show, man. I mean,
man, when I get past 4 out, when the instrument feels so different past 4, it's like, yo, okay. And then things just happen, man. You know, opportunities come past 4 hours. So when I figured that out, man, I try to go like anyone else, you know, like if you go to work, you're going to put in 8, 6, 7 hours. And I mean, you know, it's not inspiration. It's work. You know, you got to work, you know, you got to work at this shit. It ain't, you know, talent. What is that?
Well, I mean, it's like, I mean, I'd like to laugh with you about that, but I think there are some people who seem to be able to navigate without having to work at it.
And, oh, that's not me.
Right. Well, good. So that's a good follow-up question.
That's not me, bro.
But there is something. I haven't practiced over 4 hours in a while, but now that you say that, I might try to do it.
Oh man, it's something about it, man.
I remember coming up, you know, I was playing 12 hours a day, and I'm not even exaggerating. I literally played every waking moment, or practiced, I guess. I don't like that word practice, to be honest, because I think we should always be playing is what I think.
Okay, I'm going to adopt that too. You're right. I'm going to.
Even if you're doing long tones, you know, or playing some kind of like booby, booby, booby.
Well, actually, Eric Grievous told me that he heard you play. And you took one line and threw it, put it, and you mutated this one line so every possible way, and you did that. And I tried that. And I think Eric was at Bill McKenna, I guess all you guys was over Bill's house, and he heard you working on something. He said, yeah, man, Andrew took like this one line, and he worked it through everywhere. And it wasn't practicing. It was playing. That's what he said.
But that, I just, that's nice. Thank you, Rivas. I'm trying to get him on the show. But that's what I do. And I always understand that there is, whether they're physical or non-physical people, beings, whatever you want to call them, the universe, listening, and they want to hear, you know, my love. They want to hear my music. Wow. They don't want to hear me practicing. I mean, you've been to a gig where you've heard somebody practicing on stage, right?
That's true.
We've all heard that kind of stuff. And so that's nice that Rivas said those kind things. But it's, I don't know. I absolutely believe that when you and I get on stage together, or whether a rehearsal or whatever we're doing, that the way it's going to work is just going to be magic. And that's what my dream was.
Agree, man.
It was just like some kind of like, you know, I'm going to say something arrogant here, but it was like Dolphy and Train. I was like, this is just going to be something that where it doesn't seem like it's supposed to work, but somehow
it's
working.
Gonna work.
You know what I mean? And I feel like almost embarrassed saying that, but my dream was. It was like you and me playing, and I was like, oh yeah, this connection doesn't happen, you know, that much in a lifetime.
And you know, it's nothing wrong with saying that, man. I don't think we should feel. And this is dealing with what you're saying, but it's not on the horn. And I've got into this new thing. When people say, I don't want to complain, I don't think there's anything wrong with complaining. I think you should. Like, you should say what's on your mind. Get it out. Because maybe if you say it, you know, something's going to happen in the result. Okay, you'll know. So you saying that, it's not puffing your chest. It's like, yo, I feel the same thing, bro. We talked about putting together a group. A minute ago. So, we're making an affirmation for that to happen. And, you know, let's just do it.
It's
actually, the next record, man, me and you, I mean, we can make that happen, actually.
Yes, I got,
every year, the next record could be that, bro. You know, I would buy that.
I'm incredibly humbled, JD, and I just want you to know I'm very, very grateful that you've taken your time to hang out with me, and
the love
that I have. One of the things that I get to do is, you know, people that I think I know, and I'm gonna interview them or have them on the show, and I'm like, okay, yeah. I gotta listen to their music, or I gotta remember, you know, and I'm just sitting here listening to you play on whatever recording. The G thing is kind of, I don't like favorites, but I kind of really dig that.
But,
well, I want the name and everything, but
also
one of them is Bloom, and John Patton, who we all know. I just listened to Bloom in its entirety, which not a lot of people do these days. I mean, listen to
it. Oh, I appreciate that. Wow.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
I would love to hear about how he gets the different registers of the horn voice so perfectly. Mm. A very seriously underrated player, which I don't agree. I think you're pretty goddamn celebrated, but I could be wrong.
Hey, I appreciate everything. Hey, no one spelled my name wrong, so I'm appreciative. They don't get it wrong. You know, they didn't say Jack Daniels or anything like that. So, but thank you. I do not know the answer to that. Am I even? I don't even know. I never even questioned that. Like, I don't know if I'm doing it right or correct. Or I just know I was trying to hang on for dear life with that damn record. And I still got to get back to that because there's some things I didn't accomplish on that. So if he says that that's what's happening, then I take John's word, but I don't know how. Maybe it's the long tones. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, or maybe it's for me, and my complaint is that, you know, somebody talking about how you different registers of the horn voice so perfectly, you know, maybe we're not thinking about this stuff. You know, like somebody said, how do you deal with the pinky table on your vintage con? And I was like, huh? Like, what's the pinky table and what are you talking about?
Yeah, what's the pinky? Yeah, I know.
And but anyway, I did some research. I figured out it's, you know, the low notes there or whatever, but on the horn. But I was like, I'm not thinking about that. I'm just playing.
Just playing, yeah.
I mean, of course, we all worked. I'm not saying that we haven't done our work and that we haven't done long tones and transcribed. But at a certain point, folks, man, you know, we're just playing, right? We're just doing what we do. And that's it. Like, you're not thinking.
Because it's moving so fast that I think.
It takes you out of the moment.
Yeah, and then you missed it. Once you're thinking about this shit, oh, man, it's gone, man. Like, so. The thing, okay, I get it. This is what I think it is. We play or practice, but I'm gonna say play from now on because I like that better. We play at home in the conscience, and then when we play, we play and we perform in the subconscious. So we do everything, you know, and then when we get to we're thinking with another kind of mind. So. That probably happened when he said, if he said it happened, then it happened. But it wasn't anything like, oh, I'm going to be even. I didn't care about any of that. It was just trying to figure out how to find a melodic line through, you know, a couple mazes that I got lucky and put together. You know, it was only a couple of things that worked on that album. That's why I need to revisit it. You know, anyway.
So let's talk about that. One of your informants told me that you typically go into the studio, you do one day, and it's either the first or second take. You're not into doing a bunch of, you know, overdubs or takes or edits.
Oh, no. I won't say that. Well, it comes to that, but what happens in actuality is we perform sets. So we'll play the whole album down over and over.
In the studio,
like 1 hour would be a complete set, like a gig. And then the second set, we rearrange the order, No, so there's no like take one, take two. It's just sets. One's first set, second set, third set. We'll make it to four or five sets. And then I go back. I don't go in the booth and listen. Was that a good take? I wait until the complete thing's finished. Then I go home and listen. It's scary as hell, but the performances feel a lot more real to me like that.
Probably anybody who's listening to this interview with you understands this, but that process of doing a take of a song or whatever, and then stopping and going back in and listening and going back out and doing another take drives me bonkers. It's not how I operate, and it ruins the context for me. It's difficult to get into flow.
It'd be like
stopping and listening to this podcast and then coming back, and it just would be disruptive.
Disruptive, you know, it's very frightening. I'm frightened at the end, like, oh God, I hope we got something. But you usually have a good idea when, oh, that was a good vibe, you know?
Right.
So, and usually what happens is the first set is usually the majority of the tunes come from our first time performance. And, you know, for the most part, I don't have rehearsals before the recordings. We do everything there at the recording. So I'll bring in the stuff and we just, we fumble through the shit until something happens, you know.
So basically, if somebody's listening to one of your records, they're hearing a consecutive performance. It's like a captured live performance. Is that fair? Or
yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I mean, for the most part, from within those sets, like, you know, you might have something from this set that day. Usually, is a day, you know. And even when they gave me more days, man, I was like, I've gotten it down to where I could get this shit done in the day. I was like, damn, I got like a week and I got it done in a fucking day. It's like, oh God, you know, usually it's a performance. Yeah.
Right. And so when you say I got it done in a day, is that you talking? Is that the producer? Is that your band? Who's making these decisions? Are you?
Me. I have complete control. I produce it. I pick the takes, I go to the mastering, I do all that. Like, I get it because I tell my band, like, if you make a mistake, don't stop, because that mistake might be a new arrangement. So no one stops.
Let me just like back relate this to myself. I have so many moments in recorded history of my own music where I remember at the time we're like, oh my God, that sucked. Or, you know, oh, I, you know, we fucked up the form, or like that was, and then now it's like, yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was happening.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Like, see how you got out of that shit? That shit. Like, oh, let's practice getting out of trouble.
That squeak sounds pretty good right there.
Yeah,
I like
it's so authentic. You know, it's like, that's real shit. Yeah, I'm a little out of tune, but that shit is swinging like a motherfucker.
Right? and you know, it'd be like asking somebody to, you know, go to the store and contrive or, you know, script their store journey. Like, you can't do that.
Or
whatever. You're going to the park or whatever. I mean, things happen.
And then there you go. See, now you're getting into a perfect Bill McHenry recording, because that's Bill going to the store and his journey.
It's
to the
all
store.
Calculated all the way. Like, he knows exactly who he's going to pass.
No, but what I'm saying with him is like, he'll go to the store and he'll say, oh, there's a bed of roses. Fuck it. Let's just go to the roses and hang out.
Fair enough.
And see what goes down and then get back to the store, you know? So, you know, there's that type of thing. And like, I have to say, I have to mention Bill, because every band I've had, I guess now three bands, series of bands, I make them listen to Bill McHenry recordings. It's like, check out Roses, check out Ghost of the Sun, you know, that type of thing, you know. So a lot of people like that. That's my man, you know. I mean, I have things that I check out and points where I would like to get to, or me trying to get to that. I'm not gonna sound like that, but the process of trying to get to that shit, it's something in itself. So it's not calculated, but it's I don't know, man.
You intentional. You have an intention Like, that's how I would put it. And yeah. Your intention is your intention, and it's not mine or any other saxophonist. It's you or Bill McHenry. It's like,
oh, but see, it's all of ours. See, I can listen to you. I remember Jeff Watts hit me to something. You did something live. He said, yo, man, check this out. And we were both checking you out. We was like, yo, man, I hear Ornette. I hear Albert Isler, like, all, like, together. I hear this and that. And it dawned on me, it's like, yo, those are the same cats I'm checking out. We all are coming, dipping into the same pool and coming up with similar things, but different things. So I think it belongs to all of us, man. I think it's something that, you know, we share, you know. I don't think anything, none of that shit is mine. I can tell you that right now. I don't own shit. I'm just, you know, I got this, I have the clay and that's coming from something that you checked out, or I've checked you out, or checked Bill out, or checked Bradford, and my attempts at trying to get to that, it belongs to me for a moment, then it goes back there, and somebody else get it, you know, so it's ours. That's what I like. That's how I like to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely ours, and
yeah,
I wasn't saying that it was specifically yours or mine, but what I'm asking people to understand is that JD, you have this intention, and whatever that intention is, doesn't necessarily matter. And sometimes when I hear people create music, or especially when they're improvising, they don't know why they're doing it. They don't have an understanding of the intention behind. They might want to just nail the changes, the chord changes, or they might just want to keep the form. And I could be wrong. I mean, you can totally bash me on this, but I just think that I keep saying this throughout this conversation, that you have this overall understanding of the greater good of the universe, of, you know, you're not just playing this song in this moment and then moving on to the next one and playing this one. As you said, you play sets in the studio. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have the big conceptual picture. No?
I try. That is the goal. Man, even with this thing that's coming up now with the solo saxophone, where there's no one to rely on but myself, I realized that it's a mural in a sense, right? It's like they're all the songs are connected. There's this one story that's to be told. So yeah. And outside of the horn itself, yeah, the need, like all of us, we need to express ourselves. And this is my sanity. That's why I do it. I do it so I don't become the mastermind criminal that I was supposed to be. I do it to save the world.
I don't know what the mastermind criminal means, but I'll let you have that. I don't know what you mean by that.
No, it's a joke. I got into it, man, because like all of us, yeah, it's my expression. Yeah, the big picture is expressing myself. You know, rewiring what could have happened. And this is not the horn. This is just me, JD, John Daniel Allen. What could have happened in my life? You know, music gave me another avenue and introduced me to different people, another way of living, another way of thinking, and to expand my thinking. You know, so that is the purpose of me playing, is to better myself and open myself to things. And then when it comes to notes, there's the big picture is a story of a sort. And then that's why you got the titles and this shit means something. I'm not just playing, oh, I'm nailing the change. Yeah, I want to nail the changes like everybody else. I want to play some bad shit. But the real thing is, if it's not nailing the changes, and if the energy is right and if it's meaningful, then that's more important to me than nailing the changes. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And okay. I think I'm going to let that be a cliffhanger. And can I ask you one, like, kind of like kind of final question to finish things off?
Sure. I hope I can answer it.
Well, I have two directions I can go in. Okay. One, I can ask you another more, I don't know, I guess, technical question about your music, or I can get personal and ask you a personal question. It's totally up to you.
Well, personal is cool, brother. It's cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I got nothing to hide. Yeah.
When I was looking you up, I found a quote that said, after years of hardship, the 46-year-old musician has become one of jazz's premier band leaders by going against the grain and by letting his music speak for itself. And I'm not really sure. I think that's from All About Jazz or something, but it doesn't matter. What hardships? What are we talking about here? I mean, for me, it was brain cancer, but like, what are the heart? Do you want to share your hardships or?
Yeah, I don't mind. I mean, hopefully it helps somebody. You know, I had a situation where, you know, I was, I'm a recovering addict, you know, and I think that's what that was speaking to. I was getting honest about, and not for the PR aspect of it, but for, and not to make excuses for not getting on top of my craft earlier, but that's what was going on. And at that time, and at this time, I presently feel it's important to, maybe speak to someone that's going through that, and hopefully that would say, hey, if that motherfucker can make it through it, I can too. Because it was people like that for me, like that I read about or read an article, and it was inspiring to help me deal with my addiction. So that article, I think I might have mentioned vampires, and it was the type of crowd I was hanging out with. So that spoke specifically to drug abuse and the years of trying to overcome, well, learning that it was a disease and dealing with that situation. And that's the demons, you know? And I don't recommend that for anybody. I saw something recently where someone, they didn't say that it was good, good music to get high or anything, but I got so upset when I saw an older musician talk about if I was younger and I saw that, I would have said, oh, I need to get high to play well, you know. That's a myth. That shit is not real. I mean, it's a nightmare, you know. And when I got out of that nightmare, or when I saw a light or a lifesaver, I wanted to, hey, you know, you ain't gotta be like this. You know, there's a way out, you know, and that's what it was. That was my hardship. One of them, you know, of course, earlier life things that lead you to self-medication, you know, and I'm not knocking anybody that's doing, I'm not saying, hey, you're a bad person if you're out there in the world and you do that. For me, I just couldn't function. I couldn't address things that I needed to address with my art form and as a father. As a husband, and just as a person, you know, I was a grimy motherfucker.
Were you? Okay.
Oh, bro.
I didn't know. I don't know. I don't know this part of you. And I really appreciate the fact that you're opening up and that you can laugh about it and, you know, put a smile on your face.
I mean, when you play the big picture, it's not funny, but, you know, there is some comedy in that shit. You'll be like, did I do that? Like, wow. You know, who is that guy?
I have a friend who is a medicine woman. I've had her on here. Mm-hmm. Kasha.
Oh, wow. That's deep. Okay.
Yeah, no, she's, I like to call her a shaman, but she doesn't like the term. So medicine woman. But yeah, that's what she does. She works with vampires and that's part of her work, is to help people get rid of their vampires, whether that's drug addiction or, you know, there are other things going on.
Oh yeah, it's a lot.
And so it's amazing that you're willing to open up about it and share. So I really appreciate that. And
oh yeah, yeah. I have no, you know, it's not something that I'm saying, oh, that makes me a tough guy, or like, yeah, I'm a real jazz musician.
Yeah, well, it kind of does though. I mean,
and let me
fuck
say
you,
this,
fuck
you,
but it kind of does make you a badass.
let me say, because, you know, we still have friends that do their thing, and I'm not dogging them or not saying that I'm not friends with them. It's just that for me, you know, I couldn't maintain that lifestyle of and do what I wanted, what I feel that I was born to do. You know, we are born to do what we do. We're born to play the songs that we play. And that was... that was making me gray, man. That was getting in the way of what I needed to do. So when I stopped, when I got clean in 2006, I Am I Am was the first record where I produced. And then that's what the I Am I Am was about. It was like a declaration. I mean, obviously, I Am I Am comes from the Old Testament when Moses asked God, like, what do I call you? He told him, tell them I am, I am. But that's also a declaration saying that, you know, I exist. This is what, so I am, that record was like saying, you know, I'm going to do this shit without a major label. With, you know, we self-produced that record. I wasn't able to pay Greg or Rudy shit. You know, they went in there out of the love and me trying to get my shit together, man. We got in there and recorded that record for $800, you know?
That's beautiful, man. Yeah. Your friends came to be by your side.
Oh, I love those guys, man. And I still do. And we still, and as far as I'm concerned, we're still together as a band. You know, everybody, Greg August is nominated for a Grammy. Rudy's doing, but we're going to come back together. But those guys was like, yo, they rehearsed with me and we went into the studio. I couldn't pay them, man. I didn't pay them a dime.
Right.
And I made this declaration, I am, and that was to say, I was, every year I do a record, man, to make up for the 6 or 7 years I didn't do shit, where I was literally on the, in the gutter sleeping, you know, so it's like, me doing a record is like a declaration of like, I'm trying to make up for lost time, and, you know, and play catch up, really, to all you guys.
Well, playing catch up, but also, you obviously needed some healing, right? I mean, that was like a healing moment for you. I mean, I hate to compare because brain cancer is not like having a drug addiction. But, you know, for me, like making music after having brain cancer was healing. I needed to do it. It wasn't about proving myself. It was just like, I got to do this, man.
Yeah.
I got to make music. I got to write this. I got to make this record. And just because I was losing my mind. I mean, literally.
Yeah. Wow.
And so maybe there's an aspect, you know, with Rudy and everybody, you know, where they're like, hey, man, we got your back, brother.
Yeah.
You know, it's all good. Oh, we love you.
Totally
and good. Like, you don't have to pay us anything, man. Yeah, we love you. And we just want to, you know, be there for you while you, you know, crawl out of this hole or however you see it. I don't, you know, have to.
I was crawling out of hole, bro.
Okay.
All right.
Jenny's like, no, I'm cool with that analogy. It's all right.
That was about a trap door under the trap door. And I have to say, I have to, you know, thanks to Michael Brecker who called me up, and I was so pissed when he called me. We didn't talk about music. Like, damn. You know, but he talked to me for 8 hours. Ralph Peterson, a lot of people, you know, were helping me find my way out of that. You know what I mean?
Nice.
But maybe that's the bigger picture for you also. I love hearing your music. I hear a bigger story involved. Obviously, I hear the work you put in, but there's a bigger, we're coming from, it's different things, but it's that cry. That's the only thing I can call it. It's that connecting to the why you're doing some shit, you know? So for me, it was like a declaration of like, yo, you know, and I am, shine. That was another thing that was kind of more like, I'm gonna shine my shit off. And like, no, seriously.
Yeah,
bro,
I know, it's beautiful. It's amazing. Yeah.
And then what was that? Shine, victory.
Yeah.
And when I did that, man, the amount of emails I got, people, and I won't name them, they said, how dare you say victory? You ain't done shit. And I was like, yo, man, I'm saying victory because it's fucking amazing that I'm playing, man. You know, and they were mad because I said victory. I got like 50 emails, like, you don't have the right to say victory. Listen, man, if you knew my story, you'd be saying victory. And then, you know, so everything was a declaration, you know, of just saying like, hey, you know, to myself, like, yo, man, fucking hang in there, bro.
Hey, man, look, when I want people to hear this. This is important. And you're actually making me cry because I did not know this about you. And I, God bless you, man. And
oh, thanks, brother.
Congratulations. I know. I hope it doesn't sound condescending. I really it, man. And I remember I wrote on my blog when I had the brain cancer thing, and I wrote, I'm healed, I'm healthy, I'm well, because I just wanted to manifest that.
Yeah.
And I same, like 50 emails. You can't say that. You're sick. You're going to die. You have cancer. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with people?
Yeah, man.
I'm just trying to be positive. It's my blog. You don't have to read it.
Yeah.
Right? It's your music. You're just saying victory. Like, all right, I'm not totally out of the woods yet, but hopefully this manifestation will take me to victory. And you got Rudy and everybody behind you, you know, loving you and supporting you and not looking for the paycheck. And you got, you know, everybody, you know, what is up with this, man? I really don't get it.
I guess it just makes people afraid, you know. It's because then they have to say, well, damn, maybe I can't. I think when people are afraid to say, I believe it's going to happen, because if it doesn't happen, they're afraid of the disappointment and the rejection or whatever, you know.
Fair enough.
And I have to say, to Rudy Royston and Greg August, credit, I mean, man, they, they were a big part of that, man. I mean, they were turning out big gigs sometimes, man, to play like $50 hits, man. Like, you know, just the, they were just, all that whole thing, man, was it was amazing. And when people would get mad because I would say victory and all that, that was okay, because I had them behind me. I had my crew, you know, some bad motherfuckers, you know, that was basically like, yo, we gonna do this, you know. And and hopefully even this will help somebody. So like when you talk about the All About Jazz interview, hopefully somebody read that and they got their victory, you know, because if a guy like me can say shit, you know, why not somebody else?
Right. And I think it's like, I hope people, you know, get inspiration, but I also think that people don't understand where we come from. I mean, like with my dad, you know, my grandfather beat the shit out of my dad, like old school stuff, like, with, you know, boxing his ears and like hitting him with like a 2x4 or punching him in the stomach over and over. And just my dad.
Like, I'm gonna make a man out of you.
Exactly. And my dad had no childhood, but yet he was able to create me and my siblings. Mm-hmm. And I never appreciated that about him until one day he broke down and told me the story about how his dad used to come home and punch him in the stomach because he was sleeping. My dad was sleeping, and my grandpa was like, "You can't be asleep. When I come home, you're awake, son."
Oh,
right.
Cool.
But so you had your drug thing. You probably had your childhood as well.
Oh, yeah. That's some whole other shit.
Right. And whatever. I mean, you can talk about that if you want to, but it's just one of those things where, you know, we got to stop judging each other, man. We don't know each other's struggles. Like in my case, my dad created a cushion out of fucking a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. Like he gave me an opportunity to be who I am. And I never appreciated that because I didn't know. He wouldn't talk about the fact that he was completely fucked. My grandma was a prostitute, blah, 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 blah. We didn't find this out till later in life. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're saying victory is like, yeah, I'm victorious, man. I'm not saying I'm, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm the baddest cat.
Right.
This record is so
Grammy award winning victorious JD Allen, greatest saxophonist on the planet.
I gotta make myself say this shit. You know what I'm talking about, Andrew. How dare you say that shit? You know, fucking look behind us, bro. Like,
but that's why I don't understand people's attacks, especially on lovely people like you. And, you know, it's like, I really don't understand it. I think we should, if you don't have anything nice to say, just walk away from the room.
Well, it's okay. You know what? Think about it like this. You know, if you look at and this is one place we all been everywhere, but I really want to go to the Grand Canyon. You know, the amount of hits that canyon had to take from water hitting it to shape it into these things. I mean, those things, opposition defines who we are, like how we deal with opposition, how we deal with adversity, that shapes us, that gives us power, you know, and if we're able to overcome that or use it to our advantage, we become the people who we are. So, you know, after a while, you know, I mean, hey, I've been that kid that got punched in the stomach or, you know, my pops was a pisser, man. But it's made me, I think, a better father because I know what it's like, you know, a kid dealing with their dad. So I like to think that I'm better than him, you know what I mean? And in certain ways. And that applies with music too. So these this opposition just shaped us and it's made us the people that we are today. We're going to be inspirational. That's the idea to someone else that's probably dealing with their thing.
Dude, okay. Bill McHenry told me that I was going to be blown away by your energy and your presence.
Oh, okay.
Just having a conversation with you. And he goes, and I said, Bill, come on. I've known Bill for, 3 million years. He's like, nah, man, you don't understand. When you talk to JD, it's going to be off world. And you're going to have, he's going to take you to this place. And it's one of those things where I don't really know about your history. Bill just said, ask JD if he wants to talk about it. If not, it's cool. So I appreciate you opening up, man.
Oh, yeah, man.
And, it's, I think that a lot of people, oh, crap, I might actually cry. Hold on.
Oh, man, it's cool. I've been doing that all year. It's been good for me, actually.
But crying has been good. But I think that sometimes people stand back and they observe and they think like we just walked in to the place that we are, that JD just made this record. He made Bloom. He did this. He did G thing, whatever. And he's just, man, there is all of this behind the story. It's not just the long tones. It's not just the 4 hour, 6 hour practice days. There is all of this that's going into the music. And in the interview I did earlier, which was towards me instead of in reverse, mm-hmm. I said, do you know I had brain cancer? And I'm like, no, you had no idea. I was like, really? Like you're interrogating me.
Yeah, you don't know.
You don't even fucking know the struggle that I've had. And again, I'm not comparing it to your struggle.
No,
but
no, brother, that's a whole other struggle.
I was like, why are you?
I'm happy that you. I remember when it was happening, man, and we were all,
Everybody was like, "You're gonna die."
No, man, but I was telling my wife earlier, man, like this is a deep brother, like this cat. Is a great musician, but just a survivor for real.
It's all I know. It's all I knew how to do. Cause my daddy went, that's when my dad told me his story about his childhood. Yeah. He's like, here's what I went through, son. You can do this. Yeah. I basically was beat up. My mom would bring her customers to the house to have sex. And your uncle and I would have to leave. And we were like 10 and 12. Yeah. And he goes, you can do this. And I was like, do what? I'm dying of cancer. He goes, nah, I don't think you are.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, no, it was an amazing bonding moment between my pop and I.
That's beautiful. Bro.
But to go
now you
40.
Almost cried.
No, man. No, because to go 40 years and not know your dad's history was weird.
Wow.
And then to have him open up like that, I was like, what? Wait, what? Is that why we never got to see Grandpa? And he's like, yeah, he's not a good dude. I was like, oh. And anyway, jeez, God, it's like a cry fest over here.
Yeah, that's cool, brother. Wait.
But wow. I think I'm trying to be David Letterman and be your friend here. But it's like, I think the important thing that people need to remember that before we start to judge each other and like talk shit about somebody calling their song or record victorious or me saying I'm healed because I just want to be healed, man. Yeah. That's it. It's not about you. It's not about your situation. And JD is there. I just said your name wrong. Victorious. there you go. You got your dream.
Yeah.
JT Ellington over here, ladies and gentlemen.
Or Jack Daniel.
Jack Daniels. Was that your nickname at one point or something? Why do you keep doing that?
Jack Daniels. No, yeah. that was my go-to drink when I first started drinking. I was like, the only thing I knew to order was the Jack Daniels because my name JD.
Right. Okay. Well, it's close enough.
That's a whole other story. I've been everything, bro.
Right. I know. We don't need to go into that. I think I think at all these interviews, there's stories that we could talk about. Like people are like, what? No way.
I was about terrorizing New York Day. Go here. Yeah. And don't ask Eric Reeves about it. Whatever you do, don't ask him.
Okay, now I have to ask him. That's my job. I'm like that guy in everybody's life. No, I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to. So JD, I think we should just, we should stop there. I think.
Oh man, that's having such a good time, bro.
All right. So here's what I want to do. All right. So we are going to lighten things up a little bit and unless you want to keep going.
Let's see what happens. Do your thing. You know, I'm going to answer truthfully.
Right. Okay.
To the best of my ability.
Right. Fair enough. All right. So Joel Crist, do you know him? Is a booking agent, manager.
Yeah, I know Joel. Yeah, definitely.
So Joel wants to know, talk about the guitar choice and of Liberty Elman on guitar for two recent recordings.
Wow. Liberty Elman. That's my man. Obviously, checking him out with Mr. Henry Threadgill was my reason for hiring Liberty. And I like the fact that he's able to walk in a few different worlds. You know, he could take it out, he could play in beautifully. And I still consider him a member of the band, you know, like when I want to add an extra harmonic thing, Liberty Elman has been the choice. And he's just a bad motherfucker, Joe. You know that. Joe Chris knows who Liberty Elman is. I was shocked he said yes. I couldn't believe he said he agreed to play with us, man. You know.
I mean, do you think in a case like this, it's a paycheck, or do you think that there's
something deeper? No.
Yeah,
I think it was. I don't know why you said it. It certainly wasn't a paycheck. I like the fact that while I was checking out the guitar, because I didn't necessarily want to deal with the piano, because the guitar feels like a trumpet and a piano. It's not a harmonic thing that gets in the way, but it can add a harmonic sense to it. But it can also be a second horn or a foil. And just checking out Henry Threadgill, the way that he played, he weaves in and out of what Mr. Threadgill does, which I've experienced that he's able to just cover you with harmony and counterpoint and stuff like that. That's what made me say, yeah, Liberty Elman is the cat, you know. And we're actually going to do some more stuff together. I got like a lot of projects I want to do. A lot of people want to play. Obviously, we talked about doing something together. That would be hip. And I believe that will be the next one that I do. But Liberty Elman is that's my man. You know, he did a ballad record with me. He played beautifully on that. We did Radio Flyer. Was a little more loose. We didn't know what we were going to do in the studio. I had like maybe three measure melodies, and he made the shit work. So,
wow,
yeah, it would be like melodies at two measures, you know, and we just say let's go, and then we just created this composition on the spot a lot of times, you know.
Speaking of idea that just came to me is you send me yourself whatever recording, and then I play to it and send it back to you. Or I send you something, just an idea, like kind of COVID stuff or something. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You don't like that idea? Okay. It doesn't matter. It was just something that came to me.
Okay, cool. Let's do that.
All right. So
JD
and Andrew, man, it was like we can call our band Tears, you know?
Oh man.
JD, man.
Man, this has been real, brother.
It's been amazing. I can't not ask you this. And if you're like, fuck it, I want to go, that's cool too. But the title, so get rid of the midgets and send in the giants. Come on, man. You got to tell me about that title. You don't,
that's Shakespeare, right?
Nobody writes that shit and doesn't mean something by it. What the hell are you talking about, dude? What? Why are you laughing?
Oh, shit. Man? You're back, bro.
What does it mean?
I think that was like a three-bar melody or some shit. Yes, it was like, oh, yeah, I just ran across this. I was watching a movie about, what's that, Sir Knows, the Shakespeare thing with the cat. Sir Knows was helping the cat get the girl, and he was like, the guy would go to the girl and Sir Knows would be like, hey, you know, Dvořák or some Shakespeare shit, like, say this. And then in the movie, he says, so get rid of the midgets and send in the giants to say, like, he wanted to reveal himself that he was saying the real shit. So I had like this 3-bar melody. And I was like, this is the melody. Like, it doesn't mean anything else. So I was like, so fuck it. So get rid of the midgets and bring in the giants. That was it. Simple as that.
So what's that melody? Can you sing a little bit of it? Or like...
That's the tune. Right?
Yeah. And then it's just like, go.
Go, yeah. Boom.
I was like, and it's funny because when I saw that title, I was like, all right, there's got to be like, you know, this episodic, like mini suite, long.
Yeah, that was like a 3-bar melody. I was like, that was it. I was like, oh, why can't it just be that? You know, so give it a midget.
So give it a title that takes the same amount of time that it does to play the melody.
Yeah, that seems good.
Sorry, I know.
No, that's perfect.
Stupid,
that's perfect.
Stupid. Sorry.
That was it. No, so when you said the title, I was like, oh shit. Yeah, I agree. And I've only played it a couple times live, man. I should start playing that again.
I think you should bring it back. He's got a lot of Dexter. This is from Alan KU. He's got a lot of Dexter going through him on the G thing. And I was wondering if that was I actually heard Dexter in your plane too, but I was curious. And I was wondering if that was a conscious choice he made to do that, or
yeah,
if it is
totally conscious. Yeah, actually, I said I'm gonna play this shit like Dexter. I told him.
Wow.
I'm trying to play this shit like Dexter, you know, because it was. I have no problem with wearing my influences on my sleeve. I think that's important because it's like our parents, you know. We do things that our parents do. It shows, it gives us roots. So there's a version of that version made onto the record. There's a version of me trying to play it like Sonny. There's a version trying to play it like Bradford. There's a version trying to mix everything together. But that version was the one that we enjoyed. So I used that. So yeah, Dexter. I mean, I'm a big Dexter Gordon fan anyway. So he's going to come in at some point on anything.
But he also says he's a big fan of your playing, just so you know.
Oh, great. Thank you.
And I can't tell you how amazing it's been. I don't know, JD, I fluctuate between watching back the podcast and editing between, you know, am I like some kind of host or friend?
Yeah,
it's just been absolutely amazing having you. I love you. And don't be mad, but I'm so proud, man, that you were victorious. That means the world to me, man.
I'm proud of you too, brother.
God bless you, first of all, that you're here.
And your journey was like an epic journey. And man, your music is beautiful. And brother,
thank you.
We could do this record 2022 if you want.
I think you're saying like 2028, man.
We do it. I mean, I'm gonna do this one in a couple of days, 2022, man. I'll just put it on the calendar, brother. We could do it, man. Let's do it.
Okay. I'm in. And I'm like overwhelmed a little bit with emotion. And I, again, thank you for being here.
Thank you for
having me. Have a beautiful day.
You too.
Love you.
Love you, man.
God bless you. And, you know, many successes and victories in your life.
You
know, brother, I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, brother.
All right, man.
Okay,
we'll speak to you soon, okay?
Definitely. Be safe, man. Stay alive, too.
Okay,
you, man.
Thank you.
All right, brother.
Stay alive, only in 2020. Stay alive. All right.
All right, man. Peace.
I love you. Peace.
Love you,
brother.
Peace.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Constant Constance. Tune in every week for new conversations. And if you want even more, check out Andrew's Patreon for more exclusive content and additional conversations. Hosted and produced by Andrew D'Angelo. Edited and mixed by Lucy Little. Original music by Andrew D'Angelo and Maximilian Moore D'Angelo. Intro is Henrietta Weeks. Thanks so much. See you next time.
You fucking beautiful. Yeah, you fucking rocked it. Like
you
she doesn't
it.
She doesn't know she says podcast, right? Like she doesn't even